Hi, this is Randall Schwartz, host of Floss Weekly. This week, Dan Lynch joins me. We're going to be talking Agile. We're going to be talking about Taiga.io, a really great project to help you implement your Scrum and your Kanban and all those cool things. You're not going to want to miss it, so stay tuned.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Dan Lynch, episode 335, recorded May 6, 2016, Taiga.io. This episode is brought to you by DigitalOcean, simple and fast cloud hosting built for developers. Deploy an SSD cloud server in 55 seconds. Try it today for free. Visit DigitalOcean.com, and once you sign up, be sure to enter the promo code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show about free, libre, open source software. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at StoneEngine.com, bringing you each week the movers, the shakers, the big projects, little projects, projects you may be using every day and totally unaware of it, projects you may have never heard of and go, oh my God, that's pretty interesting. I'm going to check that out. Joining me this week is Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Cool, cool. And where are you speaking to us from? Probably the usual spot.
I am in my usual spot. Yeah, if you've seen me on the show before, you'll recognize this lovely veneer behind me. Veneer, is that the right? Vista? I don't know, something like that. Something to do with V. Yeah, I'm in Vision, it could be, couldn't it? Anyway, sorry. I'm in Liverpool in the UK, in case you can't tell from my accent, which is in the northwest of England.
Cool, cool. All right, and I am in the dangerous spot of being in my apartment in Silicon Rainforest up here, the place where when the sun's out, the one day a month that it comes out, comes right through the blinds right above me. So if you watched the video before and watched the crawling set of lights go across my face, you may get to watch that again this time. So anyway, but it's nice to be back home for a while. I'm actually here for a week, hanging out, visiting with friends and taking care of stuff here. So anyway, the show is not this week in geography. The show is actually about open source software. So we have a great guest today, Pablo Ruiz. I'm guessing that's his last name pronunciation. I've probably been mangling it for the last 18 weeks. And he's going to talk to us about, I hope I get this right, Taiga.io, which is an agile system, a system to manage agile projects and Scrum and Kanban and all those magic jargon words. I think if you're going to play buzzword bingo today, I think everybody's going to win. So what do you know about this so far, Dan?
Yeah, I've just been having a quick look. I have to confess that the whole agile thing is not my forte. I've long ago in the mist of time when I learned development methodologies at university, I don't think that was really, that the word agile hadn't been brought into it yet, but it has since. And it looks really interesting, actually. The platform, one of the things I was really interested in the platform, which I'm sure Pablo will tell us about, is that it not only lets you manage the project, but if you need extra like skills, for example, say it identifies that you just don't have certain skills to finish something, it will help you try and find people to contract to do that, which is quite cool. I don't know of anything else that really does that quite the same way.
Yeah, that sounds pretty cool. I have to admit also that I've never been in a company that has fully implemented and embraced Agile. I've been in many companies that have continuous integration. I've been in many companies that have a Scrum Master that don't do Agile. I've been in many companies that have talked about sprints, but nobody has ever done it the way I've seen it written about. I think its problem is they get like halfway into it and then they say, but we still want to use our bug tracker the way we've done and drive things from the bugs. And I tell you, so actually I've talked to Pablo about adoption and how we actually get this into companies and stuff. So, and I played around a little bit. It's early still. It's early. The caffeine hasn't fully kicked in with Taiga preparing for the show. Actually tried to lay out a couple of projects with it, but I just don't know enough about Agile about that. So hopefully we can have some more description of that as well. Well, you know, we can talk forever about what we don't know. It's better to talk with someone who actually knows. But before we do that, we have a very important announcement. I'm going to talk about DigitalOcean. Whether you're an experienced code warrior or just getting started, you need flexible, reliable, and affordable hosting. DigitalOcean provides developers with Droplets, which are virtual private servers that can be customized and deployed quickly to host websites, web apps, production applications, personal projects, virtual desktops, and almost anything else you can think of with full root access. I first found out about DigitalOcean back at the Scale conference a few months back, because one of the big announcements they were making is that they support FreeBSD now, which is my favorite operating system in the cloud. And within they make claims that within 55 seconds you'd have a server up and running. It really was just about 55 seconds from the time I entered all the information. It's up and running, and I immediately connected to it. I now have it as a build box, so I'm actually building all my packages for my FreeBSD systems directly there. And for $5 a month for the tiniest system, it's really, really cool. It's awesome. So DigitalOcean was built for developers and is used by over 400,000 of them, including me. You deploy and configure your droplets via a streamlined control panel or a simple API. You can choose your OS, Ubuntu, CentOS, Fedora, CoreOS, and FreeBSD. That's mine. One-click install allows you to quickly deploy apps like Django, Docker, Drupal, LAMP, GitLab, MediaWiki, Node.js, WordPress, Ghost, Magento, OwnCloud, Ruby on Rails, and more. All the servers are built on hex core machines with dedicated ECC RAM and RAID SSD storage. That SSD is really fast. Awesome stuff. I have 20 gigs of SSD. Servers can have up to 20 CPUs, 64 gigs of RAM, and 640 gigs of SSD hard drive space. Highly scalable to meet the demands of a rapidly growing application or business. Auto backups and snapshots let you easily clone, deploy, and resize droplets as you grow. You can deploy servers in all regions all over the world with gigabit speeds and 99.99% uptime. That's four nines. Full-featured DNS management to easily manage your domains or use dedicated IPs. Web console access with HTML5 plus SSH, SFTP, and KVM VNC for virtual desktops. It's an extremely active community as well, with a large and detailed set of tutorials on all the ways you can use your droplet. Want to deploy Docker? Set up a personal VPN? They got you covered. And it's so easy to get started. You can deploy an SSD cloud server in as little as 55 seconds. Absolutely true. The call to action here would be that DigitalOcean has an incredibly affordable and straightforward pricing. Servers start at only $5 a month. There is also hourly pricing available, starting at less than a penny an hour. But we're going to make it so you can get started today and deploy an SSD cloud server for free. If you go to DigitalOcean.com and create an account, once you confirm your email and account information, go to the billing section and enter the promo code FLOSS, that's F-L-O-S-S, just like the name of the show, for a free $10 credit. $10. You can run a $5 server for 2 months for that. There's plenty to get started and explore what DigitalOcean can do. That's DigitalOcean.com. And once you sign up, enter the code FLOSS in the billing section for a $10 credit. And we really thank DigitalOcean for being a sponsor of Floss Weekly. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring our guest. Pablo, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me.
And where are you speaking to us from?
I'm speaking from London at the moment. Today, it's London. Tomorrow, who knows? Maybe Madrid.
So you're a traveling man.
Yeah. In a month, it will be Cardiff. There is a nice convention then. It's DjangoCon. So, you know, you never know. But, you know, today it's the not-so-sunny London. I'm enjoying the, you know, Floss Weekly from here.
Great, great. So I have lots of questions about both Agile in general and Taiga in particular. Can you give us sort of the problem that Taiga is solving?
Well, Taiga is solving, I think, two main problems. One, it's about the platform itself and what it does. So it's features, it's functionality. Another one is actually the open source nature of Taiga. So in terms of features, I honestly believe it is one of the best agile project management tool that you can get. So as long as you understand, and we can go into some detail, you know, in a minute, the agile principles, you embrace that way of building not just software really, but any product or any project, you should find Taiga really speaking your language all the time. Like, it's there with that mindset already built in. All the project management tools out there really try to cover too much. They want to be maybe agile, but also the typical waterfall model or, you know, any other system methodology. So you finally get like this huge platform that tries to do everything, you know. So Taiga, I think, solves beautifully the agile way of basically developing any project.
So let's back up again. A lot of our audience probably is not familiar with Agile, or is familiar with it in the way that I'm familiar with it, which is badly implemented by many, many different groups who didn't totally get the picture. Okay. How is Agile different from the traditional model, or say, as I described in the opening, the driven by bugs being the only way that you're solving things? How is Agile different, and what advantages does it have?
Well, I think Agile, which actually came in a way from the software world, as many things you start from that and then, you know, go to other fields. It's basically acknowledging that you don't really know what is what you want from the start for any project. It's acknowledging that you have some vision, maybe some horizon, some idea, some strategy, but you're really humble enough to start with some basic version, prototype, you know, whatever you can call it, and adapt it after you get some feedback, you know. So you're willing to start with little information. You're willing to take the risk of starting a massive project without having all the variables known. But you, it's not only that you are humble, it's that you are, you have the appropriate tools so you can adapt to change. You know, it's also a way of embracing change. It's also a way of how your team works. It's also a way of how you manage different stakeholders, you know. So Agile is here basically coming from the software world to basically say the obvious. You don't know what you're going to build, really, unless you are able to predict the future in such a way you could actually start with a list of requirements, you know, fine-grained list of requirements, and actually implement that and nothing else, you know. Or any changes come within your team, you know, without interacting with the exterior. So Agile is basically the way when software development started to be so complex. It has been always, you know, always been complex, but so complicated you cannot predict even what you want in a month time. Then Agile is here to say, okay, this is the tool we can start using, or if not the tool, the mindset. So no, you do not have this, you know, state machine. Like you start with the analysis, and then you go to design, and then you do some back-end development, and then you go to, you know, whatever, data modeling, and then you do integration sequentially. You know, you start by creating some very primitive version of what you want, and then evolve from that. And the good thing about Agile is that it's focused on production-ready prototypes, always. Even the first version should be deployed. It's about delivering value. Unfortunately, I think over the past, let's say, 2 years, Agile is considered officially a buzzword. Right? I mean,
Definitely.
So, but in a way, open source was the buzzword, I think. I remember 2003, 2004, open source was catching up in the business arena, okay? Yeah, it is a buzzword, but it doesn't invalidate what it provides, the meaning, you know, what it's about. So I think we will, as open source or any other term, that it really has some weight to it, some meaning, I think we will overcome this 2 to 3 year buzzword environment. That it's not being harmful, but it's doing a particular type of damage, which is I've tried it and it doesn't work for me. You know, I have a lot of experience in basically going to companies or teams or even open source projects that, you know, they in a way they're developing similar to Agile principles. And they always think, invariably, they always think they are so unique, their problem at hand, it's so special, their team is so different from, you know, what you typically get. So I wonder what you typically get. That Agile won't work for them, you know. And they forget to read the literature because Agile is a way of doing things. It's not a set of recipes, you know, that you have to follow. It's a way of really developing something. and it's a framework. So you can actually adapt yourself to that framework or that framework to your team or to your product. So unfortunately, that's people sometimes don't get that they actually have some flexibility in order to be agile and do it right, you know.
Okay, I think I'm getting the sense of it, and we're almost out of time, so thank you for... No, just kidding. great answer, though. You covered a lot of the things I was going to ask next, and you just kept answering, so I just kept shut up here, which is a great way for an interview to go. One of the things I understand about Agile is that rather than having a complete document of all the requirements that don't deliver the product 1.0 until all this is done, is that instead you have a number of things that the product owner, which is also something I think interesting about Agile, is that there's the product owner works closely with the development team. So here's a list of things, and the developers say, well, if you want something in, you know, if you want something in 6 months or 2 weeks or whatever, it's going to be just these three or four things. We'll work on these first. We'll give you a release in 2 weeks, and you can see whether that worked or not. Is that a fair assessment of the difference between this and the traditional waterfall model?
Yeah. Yeah, it works that way. It's about priority. It's about choosing what is really giving you more value and allowing you to ask the important questions as quick as you can. It's about selecting those features that allow you to fail fast, you know, to clear the tech in you know, the right. Wrong. So the product owner is a key role. It is the person that owns that list of requirements in agile terminology. That would be the product backlog. Mm-hmm. And the product backlog doesn't need to be very, you know. I mean, as long as you have the top priority requirements well defined, ready as we call them. You can, in a way, forget about the lower priority type of requirements until they actually reach a point in which they are probably candidates for the team to go out and work on them. So typically what happens, the product owner has this product backlog, does the prioritization. The team will go then and estimate those user stories, the requirements, called in Agile, in Scrum, in this particular mode of Agile, which is Scrum. So basically, with that estimation, roughly, you get a sense of speed. You know, you get a sense of, okay, so we are able to cope maybe with these first 10 requirements, these 10 user stories, because they sum up, you know, some 50 points. And we think we can do 50 points of effort, of work, this sprint, you know, which is a fixed time kind of, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks work. Those are called sprints. So, mm-hmm. And after that sprint, you get a demo. And you have to show the product owner that you've done what you were supposed, you were committed to done. That's very important. It's a team commitment. And then during the demo, maybe there's some feedback and some changes. And then you get the new sprint. And maybe you have to carry over with some, you know, user story that wasn't really nailed. Or, you know, and you look at the backlog and you choose the next 50 points worth of user story. And that's how it works. It's really easy to really understand in the first place. It is the details of the methodology, you know, what makes a good product owner, what makes a good team, what makes a good user story, you know, that are kind of things that are not so easy to get in the first place.
Awesome. And how did Taiga come about?
The platform itself?
Yes.
Sorry. Well, we the company that created Taiga, it's called Kaleidos, mm-hmm. And this company works with the way we do. I mean, what we do for a living is we will be the technological partner for startups. Okay, mm-hmm. And we need a proper tool. We need a proper tool, and we are basically 100%, if not, well, let's say, yeah, very pro open source type of company. So we would never use any tool so important for our workflow that wasn't open source. So we were using open source project management tools, but none of them were really designed with Agile in mind. So what do you do? Yeah, you create your own platform. You know, you start developing as an in-house project. And some developers starting doing that. And then we have this thing called Pi Week at Kaleidos, the Personal Innovation Week, where every 6 months you get this entire week, so this week hackathon. So every employee at Kaleidos can actually develop whatever they want, provided it's open source, it's using open source, and they can demo something by Friday. So they will, you know, basically the weeks prior to the Pi Week, people will start doing this marketplace of ideas, of talent, you know, all that. But, and so Tiger, which wasn't called that at that time, Tiger, was in a way accelerated at one of those Pi Weeks. And it looked so great. People were so in love with what they have seen, even with this early stage, that we started to use it internally as our own platform. And 3 years later, not 3 months, 3 years later, we thought we were ready to launch it publicly. So that was how Tiger was born, because we weren't able to find the right tool for our agile methodology that was also open source, really open source.
That is really interesting. I mean, people are saying in the chat room there that they're trying to get a feel for exactly what Tiger is. So it's a platform that you can use to manage your projects, basically, with, you know, using an agile methodology. That would be the, I suppose, the is that fair? Is that the good in a nutshell description?
Yes. Although when you started the interview, you mentioned one of the future. You know, things that was actually a secret. So you basically...
Oh, dear. I'm kidding.
Sooner or later, we were going to release that information to the public. But so far, what we can tell, what's Tiger today, it's an online platform. You can deploy it locally, you know, behind your firewall, or you can use our cloud service. It's AGPL... version 3 licensed software. It's built on top of Django, Python Django, and it's using PostgreSQL and using AngularJS. And the features it brings is basically you can create any, you log in, you register for an account, and you can create a project. And that project can have either Scrum as a way of managing your project, or Kanban, which is a different approach to Agile, but quite interesting, depending on the project, or both. You can have issue management system. It's built in. You have video conferencing. You have webhooks. You have GitHub integration. You have many, many things. You have Wiki, of course. You have the typical things you would expect a basic, let's say basic, but smart project management tool provides you with. So, unless you really need a very specific feature that you find in any other tool, and you really that was killer feature, probably for 80% of the cases, Tiger is going to work for you, even if you don't think agile, because Tiger is not all saying you know all the time you have to think agile. You have, no, it's not that way. It's just it sits there and lets your project flow in an agile way, but it doesn't really constantly remind you are not being agile at all. I mean, that's not the way it should work anyway. And it doesn't have a lot of features. It only has the ones that it makes sense. The rest of the things you need for a project, we leave that to you to implement them physically, like really physically. We don't want to create any potential, you know, any possible feature that we want to have on Tiger. And we have a lot of requests, really. I would like dashboards. I would like reporting. I would like this workflow. I would like this specific type of issue. And many times we have to say, yeah, but that only works for you, you know. So we have the API. You can create anything on top of that API. So people are happy with that.
I noticed on your GitHub page there, there's loads of different projects that people are building with this, as you say, with the API and stuff. So, I mean, you could take it and do something different with it, you know, implement, as you say, your own tool. Something people are asking is about integration. I know you said that it can do kind of, for 80% of projects, it should do everything that you need. I'm just wondering if you had an existing project and you were thinking of using something like Tiger, and you had, say, a bug tracker that you already had a load of stuff in, could you integrate that via the API? Would you have to write that yourself, do you think?
There's already people doing that.
Okay.
Through the API. So the way this is a technical podcast in a way, so I can go into some detail.
Yeah, go for it.
I guess. So Tiger, really, all the business logic, or most of it, it's really using the backend and exposing a rich API. With JSON and REST and all of that. So everything you can do it through the API. The web interface, it's actually just one client using the API, right? So we actually have in development NCursus clients, so console-based clients that will use the same API. So there's lots of people out there having their own, maybe they use, let's say, Bugzilla, or they use Mantis, or they use any tool they use, even reporting or whatever. They only have to actually connect to the API, use the appropriate credentials, and they get lots of information. They can interact, they can activate triggers, hooks, whatever they want. And they have all the power of Tiger. It's just that they are not using the web interface for that specific integration. So they can actually listen for events, make some magic, you know, behind the scenes, and tell Tiger to move one issue from one state to another, you know, easily. And all of that is actually configurable. Most of it's configurable via the admin page for Tiger, which is something I'm really proud of. It typically the admin pages, the admin back office for any tool of this sort is really like you don't want to go there. It's just many configuration variables and that. Well, Tiger likes you to go there and really change things all the time. So, yeah, people can safely go and try. It's well documented, and there's people. I think a month ago we got LDAP integration, third-party contribution, you know. Easy. It's a pull request. We accept it, and that's it.
Excellent. And kind of backtracking a little bit, you mentioned that it's licensed under the Affero GPL version 3, which I'm a big fan of, but it's not one of the most common licenses still these days. So I'm just curious, what were the reasons for choosing that kind of license?
Interesting question. I call that extreme open source SaaS model licensing. it is... We could have gone for, BSD-like or GPL, you know, the good and all GPL version 2. But we really wanted to embrace this new era of cloud software out there that's using open source in a way that it's actively speaking. We bring to the table this debate that we really want everyone to share what they're doing. And we decided to go AGPL because we thought that we weren't able, probably, to build rapidly something that we would like to have in, let's say, 1 or 2 years. So it was also pragmatic. And we would benefit from AV development done by other people that were using their own instances of Tiger. And they would be forced to, public their source code if they had any, they made any changes. You know. But also it was a statement that you don't choose AGPL by chance. You don't do that just because you randomly pick one license that has a funny name. You really do that because you want all the people maybe to understand why you did that and understand this world of connected services, but not sharing the code or the changes to the code. We're a bit afraid of that. We're a bit concerned about that, bringing a different internet Interconnection is great. Open data is okay. But I think AGPL it has a meaning and a purpose. And we thought Tiger would be a way of promoting AGPL too.
Hmm. That's really good to hear. As I mean, I don't want to get too preachy about it, obviously, but you know, I think you're right. No, you don't. When I saw it was AGPL v3, I thought, well, yeah, as you said, there's no way you just accidentally pick that. You have to pick it because you believe in the philosophy and yeah. the you know the approach and so on. And I think that's really cool that people are doing that kind of stuff. we got some more questions coming in as well from the IRC. People are wanting to know if they are familiar with. Agile development, for example, will Tiger just very quickly make sense to them, or do you need to know about agile development to use it?
Well, yes and no. We've seen people completely new to agile that really get it really quickly. Tiger doesn't have wizard or tool or anything like that. That's down, you know, list of priorities. But it's certainly intuitively enough basic idea. As long as you've managed some projects in the past, or you know what a task, dependencies, states, you know, people in charge, watchers, things like that, you quickly what's going on there. You can actually get a very, very primitive way of doing agile, and Tiger will just help you. Now, recently, our friend Nitish from opensource.com is contributing with a lot of articles to the blog, and those articles are a way in you know partly is a way to introduce people to Agile easily, so that when they use Tiger, everything like makes sense, you know, more sense. It doesn't explain. It's not like a tutorial tool. It's just about what you expect and where to find things in general. So, I think people savvy enough with project management in general, having been in a team, things like that, probably they would like to start with Kanban, the other mode, the other typical agile approach, you know, where you have basically state machine and you move things from one column to the other and that means something to you, you know, like status. Trello is an online platform that is being very successful just by doing Kanban. So, and that's millions of users, so that has to be easy to understand and to use. And Tiger has Kanban mode. So just with that, I think they would get it.
Yeah, I was going to mention Trello, actually, because that's something I've used. If anyone's not familiar, yeah, it is that system of you have your cards and you move things between the columns for, you know, things that need to be done, things that are in progress, things that are done, all that kind of stuff. How would you compare what you're doing to something like Trello?
Well, the feedback we have, really, from users coming from Trello to Tiger, and that's happening all the time, it's basically Trello on asteroids. It's like, in some way, even I think the Kanban mode for Tiger is really simple, and we really like the simplicity of it. But for some reason, Trello is even simpler, okay? Even in too simple for people to be able to evolve the way they're managing their project. Like they start happy with Trello, but if the project or the team grows massively, then it'll, you know, it just start crumbling down. And then they move to Tiger and it's like the Kanban mode, just the Kanban mode is like Trello but with more things attached to it. So I think if someone is familiar with Trello, they would see Tiger as the next version. Now, Trello cannot do that because Trello needs to appeal to a massive audience, okay? While Tiger can explore some niche markets, so we can go a bit further, you know, and have a 3-4 features. Now, we do Trello does things we don't and probably won't ever, but if you're happy with Trello, but it looks like it's too tight now, then Tiger's Kanban mode is Trello with asterisks. And this, actually, this is a quote from many people. It's like they like this phrase, you know, Trello with asteroids. So I think that's my answer.
Excellent. And I noticed that one of the things with Trello is I think it's proprietary. I'm fairly certain it's a proprietary product, so you can't host it yourself. Yeah, so that's a big bonus for in certainly, I mean, the name of the show gives a clue, but that's a big bonus for us, is that a free software sub-project, an open source project, yeah.
And go on.
There
have been some attempts to have an open source version of Trello, not by Trello, just people, you know, around the world. But I think they don't have enough extra appeal, because Trello is so... I don't know why they haven't succeeded. So only copying Trello, just doing the same thing Trello does, and that being open source, doesn't seem to get much traction. But Trello definitely is proprietary software, even though they're probably using open source software, you know, for and their technology stack. But Trello is closed.
And we got a question from Retro D in the IRC channel, who says, I had a huge problem keeping teams focused on the product. Would I have to expend a great deal of development resources in integrating Tiger into my system? That's quite a difficult question, actually.
It is. So it is a problem of the team or the product. You know, they have to develop. The way Tiger tries to address one of the key things on projects is the team needs to enjoy the project. Needs to control it, needs to enjoy it. Typically, the tools that you normally use is the other way around. You are constantly being, looked upon. Like the tool is actually auditing you all the time. Did you do this? Did you do that? You know, you're expected to do this. And it's like a machine asking you questions. And you have to fill in a lot of information. While Tiger is basically asking 2-3 questions to what we call consenting adults. So you typically get the permission to do stuff instead of asking for permission, you know. And you start seeing that you are in control. You have you are in command. But not you, it's the team. And the way we have addressed the team issue is by building this multidisciplinary concept about the team. So everything in Tiger speaks about the team and about different people and about the roles that different people play. So you can create any role, you can assign any sort of permissions to that role. And that role is there elsewhere, you know, in Tiger. You can find user experience role, the visual design role, backend. I'm just speaking about software, but you can get marketing, journalist. And you start seeing that concept of a role, first-class citizens, you know, all around the platform. So I guess for people that have, big teams with a massive project ahead, I think... Tiger, just the setup allows people to feel like they're under control. You know, like they see this backlog, they understand they have this epic stuff to do. It's okay; they don't have to go through the entire list and write down everything. They have this multidisciplinary team concept, so they can. And so the questions Tiger will ask will depend on your role. But this is a very important concept: consenting adults. Mm-hmm. Tiger, by principle, believes you know what you're doing. A different story, a different thing is it will log everything you do. Okay? So you get activity of everything, so we can go back and see that you did something you shouldn't be doing. Tiger will, by default, allow you to do stuff, which is not for everyone. This model of allowing the team to work that way is not for everyone. I've seen that.
It's interesting because what you describe, it seems to me that the whole responsibility thing, if you're given responsibility to be able to do things without asking the boss or whatever, that can be really good for some people because they get to do things, they get to keep things going, and other people are scared by that responsibility. And maybe that's partly it. You know, if you're a little bit afraid or you're not confident and you suddenly have this responsibility, you may be kind of trapped in the headlights, as they say.
And that's one of the reasons I get this, I'm so unique. Kind of answer to Agile. Most of the time, I'm so special, I'm so unique, I have this particular problem you can solve with Agile. It has to do with people cannot do whatever they want, let's say, freely. Okay, I need to control what people are doing. I need to automate things. I need to automate things the way it doesn't allow people to do things, really. So, I think there is an underlying principle, which is lean management, which is unfortunately also a buzzword these days. But basically, lean is to take empower any member of the team with the most, you know, with the fullest responsibility you can get, and see what happens. And it's not for everyone, but when it works, it's amazing. It just, you really get the most out of the team. And I say a team, it's always about the team. And I think the open source communities out there, in a way, they've been working this way, you know, empowering people to actually share and contribute back, and then having feedback, but allowing them in the first place to do some code and you know, do some pull requests and contribute, and then see what happens, mm-hmm. instead of mm-hmm. saying no by default and then, you know. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Another quick question from IRC. People are asking, can I attach images and documents and so on, files essentially, to Tiger Kanban notes?
Yeah, of course. But you don't see that like in the summer view. That's why they think you have to go into detail view of the Kanban card, and then you see attachments, you see... you know, images, you display those images automatically. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's pretty basic. But you don't see preview mode on yet. You don't see preview mode on about those files in the Kanban view. Yeah, that's a yes.
Okay, this is all sounding fascinating. I'm still trying to figure out how to get my clients to actually use this instead of the really weird, complex systems. I mean, I don't know of anything worse than Unfuddle for a bug tracker, but that's what my primary client is using. It's just a horrible system. I mean, anything is better than that. And my group in particular at my primary client is using Trello and just started using Trello. And I want to go in, you know, next week when I'm back down south and demonstrate this. Is there a quick thing that I can do just with the Kanban part where people go ooh ah and go, let's just immediately switch to this and then start adding in the other parts to the rest of our system? Is there a quick demo that I can do that will really make them go wow and zow?
Well, any demo you want to have that impact, you know, you have to prepare in advance. Okay.
Sure, I understand that,
but I think like in 10 minutes 20 tops,
yep,
you can create like demo project. You just go register, log in, create a project, select from two basic modes, Kanban. You select Kanban, that would be my suggestion. You go to Kanban mode and you basically go to admin, and then you say, okay, my columns are going to be this, you know, not the default ones, just this or that. That makes sense for the demo. Yep. And then you go back to Kanban, you now see all that, you know, already applied, and you start creating bulk cards. You can just create quickly, just, you know, a card per line, and you start writing things that make sense. Okay, so the demo has some content, I'm not just lorem ipsum, and you put some interesting stuff there. You create, suddenly you get like 20 cards, and you start moving them all around the place, you know, to fit into the columns. Then you go back to admin and start putting some what is called the whip limit to Kanban. So you decide that for instance the design column, 3 is the maximum you should allow anyone, or the column should allow, you know, work in progress for design. So you go back and you start seeing red lines, you know, like warning, some alerts there. You then go into details, you know, 3 or 4 of them. You attach some images. You select your avatar, so it's, you know, very nice looking guy. And you maybe block some of it, and you say this card is blocked because I need first to, you know, this third party to do this. Then you see it's red, very bright red on the Kanban. You start playing. I can assure you, in 10, 15 minutes, you get like a project that has been there for 4 months. You know,
wow.
And
when you do that,
tags and all that, yeah.
Okay. When you do that, if one card is blocked by another card, is there a way to represent that electronically, or is it just in the text?
is in the text. It's you read it and you interpret it as a human being. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Great.
What you have is tasks, and there is a way to reference tasks from other tasks. But visually, in Kanban mode, every card should be independent, formally speaking. But you can read why it's blocked, and then you can understand.
All right. And I only discovered the wonderful blog this morning, and I was actually just, you know, eating it all up. So I have to go back and read all those before I take doing this demo next week. Cool. AngularJS, who chose that? And because it made it beautiful. It really looks like a really polished product. Why Angular? Why not one of the other frameworks?
That's maybe a question for Alejandro Alonso, the CIO at Kaleidos. But it's basically the framework we've been using successfully for several projects, not only of our own, but for external startups that will hire us. And it's a good code. It's robust. It's reliable. It's fast. And allows us to live in this world where we have this decoupled architecture rather nicely. When we have this backend with an API, and we have this Angular-heavy frontend that actually is just asking for the right information when it's needed. And of course, you need fairly modern browsers to keep up, with Angular. But then you just said one of the coolest things we think Tiger brings to table, and it's beautiful. Really, it looks beautiful. It's sad, but some people said it doesn't look like open source because it's so beautiful, And it was okay. We had to go past that stage at some point. But this has a collateral effect, a very nice one. When you have a beautiful interface, not only developers will use it more, but certainly designers, user experience consultants, marketing people, people that actively develop a product, but typically will stay away of your tool. It's the tool for the backend developers, I just go and, there's this constant fight between the techie people and the creative people. And the creative people just hate all these tools. And one of the reasons is because they're ugly, It's that simple. They don't like them because they are ugly. And for the first time, we've seen designers and user experience marketing, people really with this desire to use a beautiful tool, using it and enjoying it. So it's not just AngularJS that's providing the look and feel. It's allowing us to bring that. But it's also this multidisciplinary team concept to be true, because actually the entire team is using Tiger. I think that is one of the key things people sometimes don't see that these tools are not used by the entire team, and that is bad. And I think Tiger tries to solve that.
Yeah, and as much as Unfuddle is bad in terms of being a bug tracker, I'm probably going to get sued by them now. It's at least not ugly like Jira is. Now I'm going to get sued by them. So Jira is just ugly, and I'm so glad I'm not working with Jira anywhere anymore as well. So anyway, I don't know. This looks really beautiful. We're almost out of time, so I got to really get to some of the interesting project questions. What's your funding model for this? How is this going to how are you going to pay people to work on this?
Well, 3 years we were basically funding this by taking the revenue from the projects that we get paid for, from other startups, and we just put that money into the internal development of Tiger. Now, it came to a point where we just needed to more resources, more people, and to predict, a roadmap, something, not exactly the futures, but at least like something big. So we decided to ask for money, and we created the company. It's actually a US-based company. This is important because we are a Madrid, London-based company, Kaleidos. So we decided to go to the US for Tiger. Mm-hmm. And we asked money. And so the first people to put money were the employees themselves. Okay. Not only the employees being working on Tiger, they actually get some shares just because they had worked, weekends and that, but also employees, just colleagues, people working at Kaleidos. The next people we found were willing to put some money were our clients individually, like personally, people real people that had enjoyed, you know, how we performed in the past, and they were willing from their own savings to give us money. And then we had some insurance investment from my co-CEO, Ricky Posner, and his family. Now, that was the seed round A. We are now past the seed round B, where we went to engage with more, let's say, angel investor type of money. And that was easy. It was, we got the money we needed in like a month. And we're speaking here like $200,000 seed round A and about $400,000 seed round B. So basically, Taiga is in a way paying Kaleidos to continue to develop this open source tool. And this is, every month we get paid now to develop open source. And who's paying? Well, this company called Taiga. Who are the owners of Taiga? Well, the employees and some friends and family from Kaleidos. So it's still a family business in a way. But there's some money, you know, now this going in.
Is there anything on the long-term roadmap about maybe moving the software to a more of a governance model of an independent foundation or something?
Yeah, this is just the way it is now, because it's so easy for us to continue with this business as usual. It's like we treat Taiga as yet another customer, you know, like a startup. And so logistics-wise and everything, it's really easy. But that has to change this year. I mean, towards the end of the year, we will have a different model, and then Taiga will have its own, you know, employees or, you know, its own infrastructure. And we're still far from understanding or, you know, the exact model of that. But surely we will have to change, you know, to transfer, just do all the work to Taiga itself. But at the moment, it's easy. It's quite agile in the business kind of mindset. So, but yeah, we're now in a transition stage where we have to start thinking more. Taiga has to lead on.
And so you're offering paid hosting at this point, or are we still sort of in a beta mode? Can you describe what the current state of the project is? Is it usable today too?
Yeah, it's the beta ribbon is there because we still think there might be some issues sometime. And I don't know, it's we prefer people to understand it's better. But it's production ready. People are using this privately or using our cloud service with, you know, for really critical projects. More than 40,000 projects already on our cloud hosted version. Now, the money is the pricing model is basically private projects you have to pay. It's very similar to GitHub in that regard. We are still, you know, going over how many private projects are needed so you start paying. Okay, we don't want the first private project to start the pricing model to be activated to activate the paywall. So that's and we haven't activated that yet because we have many other things that we want to bring to a table. For instance, what you mentioned you know, at the beginning, you know, some sort of smart way to get people involved in your project. And so we first want to launch all these new exciting features and then activate the paywall. So people really can see that it's interesting, you know, to them to start paying. At this point, I don't know. I don't want to lose, you know, so many users just because I was wanting, like, you know, I needed this $5 per month, you know, because thankfully we don't need the money at the moment. We need to focus on product development and make sure we're doing things right and answering support at taiga.io, the mailing list, you know, listen to Twitter. Basically, Twitter is our second support channel, I guess. And so we are maybe, I don't know, October, November, that would be probably for the paywall, I don't know. But that we need to make some money out of this, you know.
Well, you got to pay people if this is their full-time thing.
I mean, yeah, it's 10 people, you know, 10 people.
Yeah, definitely.
It's a you know, medium-sized team, UX design, front-end, back-end, you know, sysadmin, DevOps. So yeah, we have to pay them.
Exactly. You can't just all do it for a labor of love. That's definitely not the case in most projects. So, some projects, I said, there are some very successful projects. Everybody does this as a labor of love. I understand that. I don't want to diss any of those. Many of those have been on the show. So, we're almost out of time. Is there anything we haven't asked that you want to make sure our audience is aware of before we have to wrap up?
No, I think I want to stress the fact that we really, you know, we are pro open source. We open data. You can export, import any project you've created on any Tiger instance to any other Tiger instance. We're really excited about what the community is developing on top of the API. That is probably the coolest thing of our day-to-day, you know, daily work. And basically, by summer, you know, something like July, August, we are going to release something very big that we hope is going to be a disruptive, sorry for using again buzzword, disruptive in the agile world and in talent management, you know, and team management. And we couldn't do that without Tiger. So I think if people stick with us and just follow us and read our blog post and maybe create one or two projects, they will understand when we release this new, it's not a feature, it's like an entire new platform connected to Tiger. They will understand and everything will make sense, you know. But that we are developing in a way secretly, so it's a surprise really for people. but I mean, Tiger was actually open. The GitHub repo really is 2 years old. Nobody cared because nobody has shared that, you know. So sometimes even if you have your code there out there in the wild, if you don't tell people, people won't notice. Well, in this case, just in case people notice, the repo is secret. But yeah, so basically try it, see if it fits you, and give us feedback. It is good timing. It's always good timing for feedback, especially now.
Awesome. Well, I have to ask you my two required questions, or my audience will get mad at me. What's your favorite scripting language?
Python.
I figured. I heard Django earlier. That's always a telltale sign. And what's your favorite text editor?
Emacs.
Yay! I got one finally. You must be slightly older than most of the people I asked a question.
I don't know. I see people, new people, you know, coming to GNU Emacs all the time and join it. I don't know. It's a matter of age. But yeah.
I think it's that it's not the default editor installed in most modern distros. So, you know, everybody has Vim somewhere, but hardly anybody has Emacs anymore. So,
You get it. Python and Emacs.
Okay, well, that's very good. Hey, you know, this is interesting. I want to have all my clients adopt this right away. I guess I got a demo to prepare for next week. But I think it sounds like you're on the right track. This really is an area that needed to be addressed sort of with Greenfield and starting with new projects. And I love that it's open source, especially because that means I get to talk to you. You said the GitHub repo, that is your current code base that you're running on your platform, right?
Yeah, it's exactly the same as we're running. So you can, you can go to the repo, you can download the zip file, TG set, whatever. Nice. Yeah, it's awesome. The same.
Okay, great. Just want to check on that because I heard something about something being 2 years old or something. But okay, I misheard. All right, well, thank you for being on the show, Pablo. Really great show.
Thank you very much for having me. Really, I really enjoyed the interview. Very interesting to see the questions about Agile first and then Tiger.
Yep.
As a platform.
That was our plan. All right. Thanks. That was Pablo Ruiz talking to us about Agile in general and Tiger. What do you think, Dan?
Yeah, really, really fascinating, actually. I mean, I admitted when we came in here that I hadn't had a lot of experience with Agile development stuff, but I have had the problems with bug trackers and other things and managing projects and so on. It can be so kind of difficult and time consuming, and it can quickly spiral out of control. And this seems like a really amazing tool. And like you said, I mean, I'm not a big kind of design guy usually, but it looks amazing. And I know a lot of people will be drawn in by that, particularly, as Pablo was saying, some of the people maybe not on the coding side who are on more of the design and so on side. But it looks like it could be, if it gets the adoption, that's the key. If it gets the adoption, it could be really a massive tool, I think.
I think so, because there's, you know, all the other tools that, well, every tool that I've used, I've hated in one way or another. This is pretty true. I'm sure there's going to be corners of Taiga that I'm not going to like, but the nice thing about it being open source is either I can fix it myself and then submit a pull request, or I can at least put it in somebody's queue to go look at and maybe, add, you know, maybe they never thought of doing this kind of a linking or something. I did like his answer, though, when he said when people want a certain way to do something, one or the other. That he said, well, then you're just not thinking quite agile yet, which is probably true. I think everybody wants the new thing they're using to work like the old things they're using, no matter how bad that was. it's a really crazy thing. It's like people coming to Perl over the years have wanted some other feature that they had. Like when Perl didn't have a switch statement or a case statement, people said, why isn't it in there? Well, you know, it really doesn't fit the Perl way. And in fact, they put one in and then it really wasn't liked very well. And so they've actually kind of taken parts of it back out because it really wasn't a misengineered design, and it just didn't fit well with the rest of the Perl philosophy. So I can completely get when he's talking about the idea that people are wanting things that actually in some ways probably held them back before, but they didn't know about it. So I think he's right on track with that. So anything else before we move on? We're almost out of time here. So
no, I was just going to say that's a traditional resistance to change, which I think we all bump into.
Right. We resist all change. I love the Portland coffee shop that says, that has the tip jar or the change jar says, if you fear change, leave it here.
That is good.
That's so clever. All right. Speaking of upcoming guests, which is my awkward transition for the week, we have next week Deviation TX, which is replacement firmware for some RC transmitters. I'm hoping to get Aaron as the co-host on that because he's a maker guy. I think I've asked him once. We'll see if that comes out. Copay, which is a follow-up to BitQuartz, a secure shared wallet. So if you want to have two signatures to release your Bitcoins, you can do it with Copay. Lucy, which is an open implementation. Try saying that three times. Of CFML. People are still using CFML, and this is an open source implementation of that. Weave, which is a Docker container-based deployment, kind of working a whole orchestration of many Docker containers having them all talk to each other. VeraCrypt ought to be interesting. That's the heir apparent to TrueCrypt. Talk to them about how they forked the code base and the kinds of changes they've made. SatNogs, which is satellite ground stations with commodity hardware. So if you want to put up your own Skynet, this will be the ground controller base station for that. We just added to the schedule Augur, which is decentralized open source prediction market application platform. That's a lot of buzzwords in a row. Basically, they're using the Bitcoin protocol to allow people to vote on things. Really interesting stuff. I don't understand it entirely, but that's why we bring the guests on. Dart is on the schedule now. Lars Back and Casper Lund, who are in charge of the Dart project. They really, the people who are in charge of it, just said that. On the short list, we still have Koha ILS. I'm waiting for the email from them. Why haven't they told me back yet? Oh yeah, because the guy got robbed, so he has to get new equipment so he can be on the show. Ew. TuliApp, which is application lifecycle management, similar to, actually in some ways similar to what we just talked about today. AngularJS, again, also on the shortlist, which will be great. I really want to get them on. I've been playing with Angular myself. You can find out all these names and more at our big spreadsheet list linked from twit.tv/floss. That's the homepage for the show and where all the shows show up right away. Please, again, if you have people that aren't on that list, have the project leader email me, merlin@stoneinge.com. And if you forget that is actually on the twit.tv/floss page. We are chatting live. We had some questions from the live audience. Again, we are at 8:30 a.m. Pacific time Wednesdays until 4 weeks from now. We have been moved even earlier. Great for people in Europe, not so good for people who actually have to host the show on the West Coast, but we're going to do it anyway. TNT needs a little bit more time, so we're spreading out just a bit earlier. We'll be at 8 a.m. starting about 4 weeks from now, 8 a.m. Pacific time. You can follow me at Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. I'm also on Google+, Randall L. Schwartz. A couple plugs I want to make before I turn it over to you, Dan. My friend Chris Marquardt, who appears a lot on other Twitch shows, I think on the Tech Guy on the weekends, wonderful guy. He's been in Nepal many, many times. He's taken people up to actually climbing Everest, at least up to the first base camp, and taking wonderful pictures there. When the Nepal earthquake hit, he felt really moved, and he has created a book of about 80 wonderful pictures from there. And he's got a fundraiser going. If you go to tfttf.com/fundraiser, you can pay from anywhere from $10 to $200 for the book. And all the proceeds are going directly to organizations he's personally familiar with in Nepal, probably even some individuals there that can get money right to where it's needed. So Beautiful project, beautiful book. It's all yours for the a small donation. That is just actually that's the only thing I want to plug right now. Go ahead, Dan. Anything you want to cover?
Yeah, sure. Very quickly, I don't want to take up too much time, but I mentioned an event last time called Liverpool Make Fest, which is going to be for hackers, makers, anybody who wants to get creative with not just technology. You can come along and do, you know, wood carving or something if that's what you're into. But there will be a lot of tech stuff going on there. It's on the 27th of June. I didn't have the date last time. 27th of June in Liverpool in the UK. If you just search for Liverpool Make Fest, or Liverpool Make Fest 2015, it'll come up on the website. I'm running some podcast sessions there, workshops and so on, teaching people how to record and broadcast, publish their stuff. So if you want to come along and get involved in that, you can do. Very quickly, Liverpool Lug, I should mention, Liverpool Linux User Group. We're meeting tonight, actually. It's too late for people probably to come now, but in future, if you check out Liverpool Lug, or LivLug for short, you can come and check it out. We've got a talk on systemd tonight, which is quite controversial in the Linux world right now. Should be interesting. And finally, the reason I can't be here next week is because I'm doing a gig, actually, at this time next week, roughly, in the Cavern in Liverpool. So if you go to danlynch.org, which is at the bottom of the screen there, if you're watching the video, you can find out more about that over there.
Great, great. And Dan, thanks once again for co-hosting the show.
No problem.
Big or great. And we'll see you all again next week on Floss Weekly.